Good morning all. So welcome to the first talk in Apache Cassandra lineup. So I would like to invite Anthony Grasso from the last speaker to do his session on Apache Cassandra using the TLP toolchain as a crystal ball for your cluster. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mahadwa. Yes, so I'm Anthony Grasso, and today we're going to go through using the TLP toolchain as a crystal ball into your cluster. A couple of things before we start. I am not a fortune teller or a wizard, despite crystal ball being in the name of the presentation. I am, however, a football player, so I enjoy playing football. I will stay up late to watch the game or get up ridiculously early to watch a game. I am also a consultant for a company known as The Last Pickle. We are consultants for Apache Cassandra exclusively. We help people deploy Apache Cassandra. We help people tune it, run it. When they run into problems, we help them fix it. And just making sure that they're successful in running Apache Cassandra. The other thing we do is we contribute back to the Cassandra project, and we also provide open source tooling to help run it. And that's part of what this talk that we're going to go through is about. And it's really been the catalyst, our consulting work has been the catalyst for the development of this tool chain. You know, because we've always wanted to performance test and tune Cassandra. And we've also wanted to investigate how the changing of a setting will affect Cassandra. We've also sort of wanted to confirm code behavior and, you know, compare Cassandra versions as to whether, you know, a previous version is running better or worse than a newer version. And that way we can help make a recommendation as to which version people should run. I should point out, though, that the brains behind this and a lot of the work goes to John Haddad, who's just there over in the front. He's been the man that's contributed the most work, and so we have him to thank for a lot of the work that's gone into the tool chain. Yes, thank you, John. One of the common scenarios we see out there in the wild is, are we confident in making change to our cluster or making a setting change to our cluster? And, you know, the typical scenario around that is we might see a latency increase, for example, over a period of time. It's not drastic, but we notice an increase, or there could be a spike, and the spike occurs more frequently. And so we want to fix that or nip it in the bud before it becomes a real problem. And so we might go to the documentation, work out what setting to change, figure out, pick something and go, yep, this looks great. And then we come to the point where we want to test it. So we may deploy it to QA, and if we're lucky enough, the QA matches production, and then we run some tests and, you know, we think it's okay. The real question then is, are we confident in making that change in the cluster? So just a quick show of hands. Who here has actually deployed something, not necessarily to Cassandra, but felt really uneasy about making a deployment to production, like ever? Yeah, I think we've all been there, right? Yeah, I certainly have. And usually it's come about, you're in a rush, or there's been a lack of testing, and you've just had to get it out there. And if you get it wrong, things blow up. And it's not pretty, and people get unhappy. So how do we test this? How do we test our change? So we need to apply a production load to the cluster, and you know, traditionally, the best ways of doing this in the past were, you know, you write a custom tool yourself that you maintain to apply a production workload to the cluster. Or you may use a shadow cluster and you know, use that to test a change. The shadow cluster may not always be the same as production. You could also deploy a canary node and test the setting on a canary node. The problem then is if you're making a schema change, it may not be apparent what that schema change will do to the cluster. And also some settings may not have their full effect until they're deployed across the cluster to all the nodes. The other option is we could use Cassandra Stress to try and put some load on the cluster and test it that way. There are some problems, though, with running Cassandra Stress. One of the big things, though, is it gets infrequent updates. And so if you come across a bug or an issue, it may not get fixed straight away. One of the other things as well is it has simple workloads, so only a read workload, a write workload, and a combined one. And from those workloads, trying to craft a profile to mimic a production load is sometimes hard, if not impossible. You're missing things like UDTs, and Cassandra Stress will only ever work, will only ever do batches, and whether you've asked it to or not. And to change that functionality is far from straightforward. So Cassandra Stress can be a bit frustrating. I would say it's probably not as frustrating as Season 7 of Game of Thrones, but it's enough to sort of make you think about going somewhere else. And we, in TLP, had to do some work using Cassandra Stress a while back. And we came across some of these problems, and we thought, well, we could fix this and put a patch out to get it to where we want it to be, but the changes were just so large, and the surgery was just going to be so great that we thought, well, if we're going to do such a large amount of work, why not do something new? And that way we can get to a product that we like and we'll be able to, and everyone can use very easily. And one of those big things was we wanted to ship with common workloads that you see in a production, or that you see out there in production today. And then on top of that, we wanted to make those workloads configurable to tune them to match what you do in production. And lastly, if the workload that it shipped with, or the workloads that it shipped with, were not exactly what we wanted to make it easy to add a workload to the tool. So out of that, TLP Stress was born. We wrote the tool in Kotlin, and the reason we did that is it runs in the JVM without the Java overhead. It gives us access to all the Java libraries, and it has excellent Java library support. And so we're not really giving up on the Java goodness that we like. We just don't have the overhead of running Java in the JVM. We've been using Kotlin for around 2 years at TLP. I myself am a massive Python fan. I like using the Python language. I can do a lot in it. And I found going to Kotlin quite easy. It has great IDE support, and it's great because it has the static typing. Because of the support for the Java libraries, we make use of the DataStax Java driver in TLP Stress, and we track the metrics in the same way that the Java driver does. We instrument them and expose them to Prometheus, so it makes it really easy to scrape metrics from TLP Stress. The big bonus, though, the big thing here that we really like about the tool is it comes with a whole bunch of workloads that we can use straight out of the box. So we've got basic time series, we've got counters, we've got a key value workload, lightweight transaction, it does locking, maps, materialized views, a random partition access workload, and some UDT time series one. The main commands to run the tool, there's the run command, which runs a workload. There's the info command, which gives us some information about a workload, and the list command, and so you can list all the workloads that TLP Stress knows about. This is really useful if you add your own workload, and then you can run list to see if it's detected the workload that you've added. So let's look into some examples on how we would run a production workload against a cluster. So the first one we'll look at is a key value workload. So we want to do, say, 70% reads against our cluster. We want to do 100,000 partitions, 10 million iterations, and 50,000 rows we want to pre-populate into the cluster. How do we do this in TLP Stress? Quite easily, there's the command right there. It's very straightforward. So we can see TLP Stress run key value. I've specified my reads as 70% or 0.7 because we wanted 70% reads. I've said that we want 100,000 partitions using the partition option. and then 10 million iterations using the iterations options, and 50,000 rows pre-populated using the populate option. Now, as you can see, one of the great things is we just use the human readable numbers, so we can just plug that in and it gets recognized straight away, which is nice and handy because I hate typing zeros into my keyboard. Now, when we run TLP stress, as you can see, it will create the schema. The thing I want to point out is highlighted in yellow. We've told it that we want to do 10 million operations, and it's going to do that with a consistency level of local 1. And that is by default, that it writes to the cluster with local 1. After the schema is changed, we then move on to pre-populating data in the cluster. And so as you can see, as I've highlighted in yellow, it gives you the progress bar, it gives you the time it took to do the population, and it tells you how many rows it pre-populated. So once the pre-population is complete, it then runs the profile. And as you can see, we've said, 10 million iterations, and as I've highlighted in yellow, it's seen that, and we're just going to run the test then for the 10 million iterations, and you'll get that output on the console. And so you get the read latency and the write latency, the number of iterations we've done, and the rate. And in the very far left column, there's also the errors that we're seeing. All right, so the next example we'll look at is a time series workload example. Now, this is another fairly common workload we see out there where Cassandra is used. People running time series, installing time series data from IoT type setups. So for this particular test, we want to do 50% reads. We want 1 million partitions, and we want to run this test for 4 days, 13 hours, and 21 minutes, just because we can. And we want to set a time window compaction strategy with a TTL of 6 hours. And we want to do a TTL for 6 hours so we can actually remove data while we run the test, because we don't want our disks filling up while we run the test for 4 days. So how do we do this in TLP stress? There's the command there. So we've selected our basic time series workload. We've set the duration this time to the 4 days, 13 hours, and 21 minutes. And so as you can see, there's no iteration option. Instead, we've chosen a duration. We've also set the compaction using the compaction option, and that's the long format that you would normally see in a schema for the time window compaction strategy. And so we've set the window to 6 hours. There is a shorthand format for this. You can actually just specify TWCS, hours, 6, and it'll do the same thing. And so it just depends on which one you want to use. And lastly, I've set the TTL to the 6 hours to match our time window compaction strategy window. So once the schema is created by TLP stress, you can see there highlighted in the yellow that TLP stress has applied the time window compaction strategy to the schema and also set the default time to live to 6 hours in seconds. Then when we run the test, you can see that it's now, instead of saying we're iterating for a particular amount of iterations, we're actually running the profile for a certain amount of time. And so it's just gone and converted the 4 days and 13 hours and 21 minutes just down to minutes. All right, so moving on to the last example, let's take a look at the random partition access workload. So this workload is another one we typically see. You may have a cluster with a friends list, for example, and the user is a partition, and the rows in that partition are the friends of that particular person. This is typically a read-heavy workload, and so we want to do like 98% reads with 1 million partitions. We want to do 10 million iterations over the cluster, and we want to pre-populate with 1 million rows. The last thing we want to do is we want to try modifying a setting in our schema where we lower the index interval, because we want to try and stick the indexes closer together, and we want to see if that improves our read rate, for example. So to modify the schema, we need to know what the schema looks like first, right? In TLP stress, you can actually query the workload and get back what the schema is before it runs, and that's that info command we spoke about earlier. And so as you can see there, the table that gets created is called random access. The other thing to note about this particular workload is we have dynamic workload parameters. Now, these parameters are specific to the workload. They're not global settings like the other ones we've looked at. They just affect that particular workload only. And you can specify them, as I've highlighted in the yellow, using workload and the setting name. And so the settings are listed below in that table. The different parameters that you can specify are rows and select. The rows one will specify how many rows are in the partition, and select will tell us whether we want to select the entire partition or just select a single row. So for our test, we will alter the schema using the CQL option, and we specify just a typical CQL command that gets applied after the schema is created. So we're just doing an alter table to alter our index interval, and we're changing it from the defaults, and we're squeezing the indexes a bit closer together down to with a max of 1024 and a min of 64. Then we specify the dynamic parameters specific to the workload. So I've set rows to 50. I don't have a lot of friends. I just got a lot of close friends, so 50 is enough for me. And we want to select a specific row in the partition. And we execute that, and as we can see, TLP stress is recognized that we want to alter the schema. So highlighted there in the yellow, it's doing the alter table, and it's going to apply that change. And lastly, for the pre-population, it's recognized that we wanted to do 50 rows per partition, and so it's going to pre-populate those 1 million rows and in the cluster, each partition having only 50. So we won't go into what the output looks like because we all know what it'll look like. I would like to look through some of the other options that we have available as part of TLP stress. You can do reporting, a fair bit of reporting with TLP stress, so you can get a compressed CSV output. And this is useful if you want to run a particular test, get that output, change a setting, run another test, and then do some graphing and see what the difference in results are. If you've got Prometheus, you can scrape the metrics using Prometheus because, as I mentioned before, the metrics are exposed. The other options we have available are client options, so you can change the consistency level from local 1, which is the default, to something like quorum each if you want to run a test with that. You can also change the concurrency of the requests, so the number of requests we do at one go. We can also do a coordinator-only option, and that's for a cluster that has coordinator-only nodes where there are nodes in the cluster that don't own data and just act as coordinators. And so you can tell TLP stress to connect to the coordinators and do requests that way. We can also tell it to target a specific data center using the DC option. We have some table options that we can use to modify the schema before it gets created, and so we can change the compression, the key cache, the row cache, and the replication strategy. By default, the replication strategy is 3 when the schema is created. You can set that to something else. We have seen cases where you'd want a different number. The last lot of options that are available in TLP stress are workload options. So as we saw a couple before, there's one of the useful ones is the partition generator option, and this changes the way partitions are generated by TLP stress. So you can do like random, and it'll just randomly pick a partition and populate it. Sequential will obviously go through the partitions in order, and Gaussian will do like a nice bell curve population. The last option that's useful is also rate, which does rate limiting. So if you have a cluster that has lower hardware specs than what's normally recommended, you can change the rate so you don't kill it. And that's also been fairly useful, like if you want to do a quick test on CCM or something and don't want to kill a cluster. So TLP stress version 4 is available as a Debian package, RPM. For those of us on Mac, it's available as a tarball and also in a Docker container. We are looking to put TLP stress into Homebrew to make installation in a Mac easier. It's just we haven't gotten around to it, just need a bit of time to do it. If you're interested in the source code before running it, It can be found in our Last Pickle organization page in GitHub. There's also documentation on our site to get some more information about options and how to run it. And that's at the Last Pickle TLP stress link. And if you still have questions or run into bugs or have problems, there's a mailing list, tlp-dev-tools@googlegroups.com. That's always pretty actively monitored. And yeah, if you have any questions, just throw it to the mailing list. All right, future work for TLP Stress. We want to do further customization of workloads. And so we saw earlier back there was the dynamic workload options. We want to work on changing the field size of particular fields in a workload. Because really the things that matter when you're doing performance testing is the workload size and the pattern you hit the cluster with. And so if we can make it so you can modify certain field sizes, we can then modify the workload size. And so that changes on the cards. Another useful one is adding fields to the schema. Now, you can do that using the CQL option, but those fields are never populated. So we're looking at adding an option that adds fields that get populated and once again changes the workload size. And the last thing that we're looking at doing is cluster mode to better reflect multiple clients hitting a cluster. So that's our stress tool. We need a cluster to test it against. So we could test it against QA or prod, but if it catches fire, then people get unhappy. There's also another way we can spin a cluster up quickly, and that's using CCM. One of the problems with that is it uses local hardware, but hey, we could give it a go, right? So I tried this out. I started a cluster in CCM on my machine. I've truncated the host IDs just so I could fit it all on the screen, but that was the cluster before we started. I then decided to run TLP stress against it for funsies. And so we, you know, wanted to do a duration of 15 minutes and a million partitions at 90% reads. I did put a rate limiter on it because I didn't want to kill the cluster. And I thought, well, I could pre-populate this with a million rows before I started. And I wanted to use a leveled compaction strategy for the compaction. So that's the shorthand format you see up there as well, by the way. And I wanted to turn key cache off because I wanted to look at before and after with key cache on. So I started that, and immediately I was hurt by a 2 hour and 46 minute load time for the pre-populate. And I thought, well, that pre-population's around like 160 minutes. For 10 million rows, if I change it to a million rows, it might go down to about 16 minutes, and then I could start my test. So I did a pre-population with a million rows and ran it, and so yeah, 15 minutes later, my cluster had data in it, and I was off and running. So as I was running through the test, I decided to scroll up in my terminal to grab some information, and immediately my latencies changed, which was annoying. So I decided to leave the cluster alone and go do something else. Can anyone guess what I did next that changed the latencies in my test? Anyone? I opened Google Chrome. Yeah. Great. Can anyone guess what I did after that in Chrome that caused my latencies to change again?
YouTube.
Close. Netflix. So, the take-home message from this... Yeah, great testing, by the way, yeah. The take-home message from this is we can use CCM and the latencies generated by TLP stress to work out what we're doing on our machines. But more importantly, doing testing using local hardware is a really bad idea because you've got resources that are shared and services fighting for them. So we really need a proper cluster to do proper testing because in CCM, if you so much as sneeze on your keyboard, your latencies are going out the window. So the great thing about CCM, though, is a good example of how to create a cluster really quickly. And there's a few commands you can use to spin a cluster up. And we thought, wouldn't it be great to spin up a cluster in AWS really quickly, launch resources, provision, and then configure Cassandra? Because right now to do that in AWS manually is a pain in the ass. And to do it repeatedly is worse. So there are tools available to do it. People have done this in-house, but there isn't a public tool out there that does this sort of thing. So we thought, we'll make a new tool. We want it similar to CCM. We want to get a cluster up and running in 10 minutes. We want it to be configurable, and we want it to work on real hardware. So I guess AWS was the choice to go with. It's fairly common. Most people are on that platform. And that's how TLP Stress was born. So TLP Stress, once again, written in Kotlin. We use Terraform to provision the infrastructure, and we do a clever thing with Docker where we actually talk directly to the Docker service. So we found a Java library that we use in Kotlin that allows us to send commands directly to the Docker service rather than going into a subshell. And we use that as a way of abstracting us away from the operating system. So you can run this tool on any OS without any problems, as long as you're running Docker. And this will provision machines into Amazon and get them up and running into a cluster. So some of the features that TLP cluster have, you can change the instance type, you can change the Cassandra version, you can change Cassandra settings, you can change the cluster size, you can also specify additional libraries at the installation time. So if you have a metrics library or some other library that you've written that you run inside the JVM as part of Cassandra, you can add that during the installation and it'll come up and run along with Cassandra. So how do we get a cluster up and running really quickly? Well, our first command to run is the init command. So the init command will initialize the Terraform, which describes our infrastructure. And for this particular example, we want a 6-node cluster. We want R5 extra large instances. We also want a stress node as part of our cluster to come up so we can run TLP stress against the cluster. In addition to the stress node, by default, TLP cluster will start a monitoring instance as well, which will have some monitoring tools on it, and we'll get onto that in a moment. The other option we want to specify is the AZ option, because we want to say for the cluster to come up in availability zones A, B, and C. By default, if you don't specify this, TLP cluster will just spin up instances in all the availability zones, and so, for example, in US West 2, it'll use all four, and so you'll have nodes spread out across all four. We want to have, we use the EC2 snitch, and so we want to have three racks, and so we want to use availability zones A, B, and C. The last three arguments in that list are the client, the ticket number, and the description. For those, you can just put whatever's applicable. So in this case, I just put TLP, Apache Con, and a description. When you run that command, you can see that TLP cluster has said, I am using availability zones A, B, and C, as highlighted in the yellow. And it said that it's recognized that we wanted a 6-node cluster running R5 extra larges. And it's also recognized that we wanted a stress instance as well. And that's all going into US West 2. Great. So we've got all our files ready for Terraform to run. The next thing is to run Terraform. And we can do that using the up command. So we run TLP cluster up. And that will start provisioning our hardware. So pretty straightforward. That's what it looks like. Well, that's sort of a truncated version of what it looks like when it runs. So the container runs Terraform. It starts provisioning all the instances. Down the bottom of the screen, it asks us to authorize these actions. And so you just type in yes, and away you go. So once Terraform is finished, all the resources will be up, and it'll say it's completed. And the last thing we put down the bottom is a command that you can use to source an environment file. Now we'll look at that environment file in a moment and what it does, but the next thing to do is to specify our Cassandra version that we want to use. And this can be done using the use command. So we run TLP cluster use to specify the version we want to use, but we also want to specify some configuration changes in the cassandra.yaml file. So in this case, I want to call my cluster Apache Con, because I don't like the name test cluster. I see it all the time. We want to use 16 vnodes. We want to turn on trickle fsync because we're using GP2 EBS volumes. And I want to disable dynamic snitch to improve the performance. Now, a quick note here. If if a setting doesn't appear in the Cassandra.yaml file and you specify it here, TLP cluster will add it into the Cassandra YAML file. And so in the case of dynamic snitch, that setting doesn't appear by default in the Cassandra.yaml file, and so TLP cluster will add that in with the value of false. The last argument we're specifying there is the version of Cassandra we want to use. In this case, we're using 3.11.4. We run that command, and that's the output that we get. And we are ready to install files on the nodes that we've provisioned. So next command to run is install. And so we run TLP cluster install. Pretty straightforward. When we run that command, this is what the output looks like. So the install goes through. It uses PSSH to push all the files up and then install them using some shell scripts. And so that all gets done in parallel, at least on the Cassandra nodes. And so that they all return success eventually. And then it goes to provision the stress node and then the monitoring instance. And then we're ready to go. And so the last thing to do to get everything up and running is to start it. So that's pretty straightforward, just TLP cluster start. The output looks fairly similar to install as well. So it'll use PSSH as well to go back through, start all the services. Then it goes and starts the monitoring services on the monitoring instance. Specifically, it will start Prometheus and then Grafana and get that up and running. And then as the last thing, once that command returns, it then gives us URLs to go to access the monitoring instances, the monitoring UI and also the Reaper UI. And one thing I left out, is Reaper is also installed on each Cassandra node in sidecar mode. And so there's the URL to the UI for Reaper as well. So we talked about the env.sh file, and this is actually very useful because it creates a bunch of shortcuts for us to access the cluster once it's up and running. And so it gives us things like smaller server names, it overrides certain commands just in the terminal only, and it gives us a bunch of ops commands that we can use to restart the cluster or get the status or do a bunch of other things. So when we source the env file, we get this warning to say that we're overriding these commands. And that's fine because when we exit the terminal, those aliases go away and you get back the original behavior of those commands. And so we're overriding SSH, SFTP, SCP, and rsync. And it just saves us having to type in SSH, the identity file, the login name, the IP address to get into a node. It's just, it becomes a real hassle. And so the idea of the tool was to make everything as usable and as easy to use as possible. So an example of this, if we run cstatus after we've sourced the env file, we actually get like the node tool status output from one of the nodes. And once again, I've truncated the host IDs just so I could fit it all on the screen. We talked a little bit about getting metrics and having a monitoring instance in the setup. So Prometheus is configured to scrape metrics from each of the nodes and TLP stress once it's all running. And then we use Grafana to graph the Prometheus information that's scraped. And that all happens and it's all configured out of the box. So when you start a cluster up, it's all done automatically. There's nothing for you to set up. So if we look at the UI after we've started the services, we can just navigate to the Prometheus URL. It's probably a bit small to see, but that's what you get. I started a TLP stress workload and to give the cluster some a bit of an exercise, and it started producing some metrics. The metrics output in Grafana looks like that. That's just one of the screenshots from the overview panel. There are a number of other panels in there. There's a data status panel, which gives us the size of the data. There's a Cassandra internals panel, which tells us about the Cassandra internals, like gossip, dropped hints, compactions, that sort of thing. There's a hardware panel which tells us about CPU usage, memory usage, and related statistics. And there's also a JVM panel which tells us about like the PyNew and the major garbage collection. There is also a dashboard for TLP stress built in out of the box, and that just scrapes all the metrics from TLP stress, and we get similar output that we see on the console. So we get the average read writes per second. We also get the P99 latencies for read and write, and the error rate as well. When you navigate to the Reaper UI, it's already set up and ready to go, so you don't need to add the cluster. It's just all there, and that's what the UI looks like when you go to the when you navigate to the Reaper UI. So TLP cluster is available in .4. I think for some reason the slide says .3, but that's not accurate. It's actually .4, and it's available as a Debian, RPM, and Tarball for those of us on Mac. We will eventually get to making it available on Homebrew as well. The source for it is once again located in the Last Pickle Organization GitHub. The documentation is on our website as well. And once again, if you have any questions or run into problems or find a bug, please email us at tlp-dev-tools@googlegroups.com. Future work for the project. We want to do some project reorganization. John's already started that and getting it mostly ready to commit. And so this allows us to break bits and pieces of it into sub-projects and just makes it more deployable and less integrated. So we've got sort of separated parts, makes it easy to build. We also want to improve the security in TLP cluster as well. Right now, we just limit access to the IP address that you're coming from. And this is a bit of a short-term fix at the moment. We want to add things like a proxy jump box, put everything in a VPC, because right now we use the default VPC, and we just want to lock down the external or internet-facing ports in the security group as well. The other thing we want to add is advanced topology, because right now you can only bring up a cluster in a single data center, so we want to make it so you can add multiple data centers or maybe even spin up a cluster across multiple data centers straight off. We're still brainstorming some ideas on this, and it is definitely on the cards. And lastly, we want to add more tests to the project, so we want to get very meta, testing a test project. So we need a bit more of those. And that concludes our walkthrough for the tool chain. I'll hand the floor back to everyone else now. Is there any questions? Yeah, out the front here.
Yeah, I have two questions. First one is, how you deploy this with Terraform? Because it needs our access secret key or instance with role dedicated for EC2 instances, and I didn't see it here.
Yes, that is actually a very, very good question. So I did gloss over some of the magic. Initially, when you start TLP cluster, if there's nothing ever set up and it's your first time running it, it'll actually prompt you for a few things. It'll actually say, what region do you want to use? What are your AWS keys? And ask like your email address, and a couple other things. And those things there actually also get used for tagging. So the cluster name, I think, one of the names and the arguments and your email address get tagged onto the instance as well. And so that's how it uses the keys to set everything up.
Okay. So the second question was about this stress tool.
Yep.
TLP stress. Where do you see as an author or one of the authors of the solution? Where do you see the biggest advantage compared to stress tool Cassandra?
I think
this is quite similar. Some defined workloads. You also can change, for example, the structure of the table on which you stress. So where is the biggest advantage?
The biggest advantage is the options and the workloads available out of the box. Cassandra stress, it requires a bit of work to actually get it to a workload that mimics what you have in production. Whereas with TLP stress, it has the workloads that match what you'd see in production out of the box. And it's actually like the pattern that you use to call the cluster is what is, you know, really comes out of the box. And then we're just varying the size of that using the options available in TLP stress. And I think that's the biggest advantage is there's a bit more control, and everything's pre-packaged and ready to go. Whereas with Cassandra Stress, when we used it, we found we spent a few hours just tweaking things and trying to get it to do what we wanted to do. You know, one of the things was the UDT thing I mentioned. We wanted to do a UDT workload, and we had to kind of fake it. There was no real way of doing it. And so that was, you know, and that was real pain. And so we figured, like, you know, if we can sort of package these things from day one and you can just run it, then you don't have to stuff around for hours and hours trying to, yeah. And, you know, and if it didn't actually come with the workload you wanted, you could always add one to TLP Stress quite easily. So, yeah. I'll get to you in a sec, Joe. This one here?
So I'm wondering, like, how you kind of start up that cluster, and it's one of the things that we perform, like starting up signals first, and then, like, starting new signals one by one, kind of thing.
Yep.
Kind of, otherwise, we kind of, like, crash what gets done.
Okay, so with the way the everything's provisioned, so all the AWS resources come up according to the order Terraform puts them in. So it'll create the security group, I think, and then it goes and creates all the instances. And that's just all your vanilla infrastructure. So at that point, you've just got a bunch of instances and a security group with nothing on them.
Right,
and so you could put anything on them at that point. So you've got like six nodes in a security group, and you could just SSH in and, you know, install, you know, Tomcat, and, you know, it doesn't matter.
It's kind of hard to kind of like manage the dependency with one. I'm just wondering how you kind of start up signals first, and then like
Okay. So then, as far as Cassandra goes, then.
Could you repeat the question? We can't hear it.
So the question is. How do we handle the dependencies when we start all the infrastructure and start Cassandra? So when we do a start in TLP cluster, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, we actually set, because the cluster is completely empty and there's nothing on it, we do an unsafe bootstrap, I think it is. There's a setting in there which means you can bootstrap everything at the same time. And so we switch that on and bring everything up. Because the cluster has no data, it doesn't matter. And so when the nodes start, they all just select their tokens all at once, and then it's ready to go. And so there's no real dependency on seed nodes. There's no real dependency on waiting for one node to come up and then waiting for another node to come up. They just all come up at the same time, and then they work themselves out. And then once that's all set up, then you can start pushing data into it. So and you can do that because there's no data originally in the cluster. It's all empty. So... yeah, I had a question over here, Joe.
Yeah, so I'm just curious about ML's pool. I'm just curious about a little bit of the roadmap. Is there anything in the roadmap for like custom like SQL, like people can give their own schema and like a query percentage of like this SQL statement, this SQL statement? Is there any kind of like custom workload? Yeah, so I guess maybe a little bit more context to this question. We supported like custom workloads through writing Java. Nobody ever wrote Java. So I'm just curious, like, do you guys have any control? It seems like people want to write SQL.
So, regarding writing custom workloads, there is an inflection point in which the effort of writing configuration becomes more than just writing the file. So if I want to go ahead and add a workload right now, it takes me under an hour. It's 30 lines of code, maybe.
Yeah.
So basically, as soon as we start publishing the artifacts to Maven, we will pull down that dependency and grab and do whatever you want.
Right.
But I don't really know if there's a point where the diminishing returns hits and it just becomes a colossal waste of time to try and support, like, you know, take us twice the amount of effort for a workload to save people an hour.
I totally agree. I'm just curious because it sounds like the plan is still to do the Java plugin, it's not really to do it arbitrary. You get the SQL and we're like create those tables for you and then like execute the SQL.
I think if it happens, it will be around the next GCC, but not before that.
Yeah. So did everyone get that? On this side, did everyone get that? It was around custom workloads. All right, cool. At the back.
Is there any way to run some shell script on the machine as part of bringing it up to, like, set up the disk, like block size and stuff like that?
It's actually a really, really good question. At the moment, the volumes that get mounted are just whatever comes with the instance. This is a bit of a pain point that we wanted to try and address in terms of mounting a different type of instance. Theoretically, yes, you could. You can run a shell script as part of the installation that would... You could actually run it as the first thing that would go and create another mount and then mount it all. So yes, you could do that to get around that. I think ideally we want to try and make it a bit more user-friendly as well, like maybe have an option to specify a drive or some sort of size and some sort of type as part of the options, and that way you get it from day one rather than having to mess with the install commands. So
to add to that, right now the installation, when you do init, it drops all the provisioning files in the directory that you're in, so it's like a workspace. So you can just, and the install isn't very clever, it's a bunch of super hacky bash scripts. So whatever you want to do, just go nuts. It's not like hiding that from you.
Yeah.
The idea is that it's going to dump enough in front of you so that you can do whatever you want, and we're not trying to like hold your hand too much. The tool is originally written. I originally started the tool hoping that I could make it easier for the development team committers really to test builds of Cassandra, which it can do right now. So
what John's actually talking about is here. There's a directory called provisioning, and you can just stuff everything in there, and that's where all those install scripts and everything go. So you can just put all in there, and it's all ordered in a certain order. So those scripts only just get executed in the numbering order that they're listed in. So
I can just edit those scripts and then move on to the next step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another question over here. Sorry.
Yeah. What does the workflow for a TLP build look like if you have a local Cassandra source view? So the example you have is like with 3.11.4, but imagine you have some custom local.
Ah, right, yes.
You want me to?
Oh, you can do that if you want.
So you can currently just call TLP cluster build, give it a build name and point to any directory that you have. It'll build the dev package and then put it in the current directory to be installed. So when you say use 3.11.4, it actually pulls it down and then pushes it up to all the instances. So basically any dev package that you throw under provisioning and then either Cassandra monitoring or stress will be installed.
So I can have a package.
Just drop the dev package in.
Just drop it in,
yeah. You could literally test like anything you want in cluster in under 5 minutes.
Yeah. So anything in that provisioning directory goes onto the instances. Anything. So you can put whatever you want in there. An SVG file will go up if you wanted to, for whatever reason. So, and the other thing that John mentioned about the dev packages, when we say 3.11.4, it'll download the package, decompress it, extract the files that it needs out of it, and then set them and get them ready to get pushed up. So, yeah. Any other questions? Oh, yeah, the front here.
Back to the TLP stress tool. Do you have some warm-up phase after the cluster gets populated?
Not as far as I'm aware. I guess your warm-up phase, you could add more iterations or just have a longer duration to kind of get it. I know what you're saying, but there isn't really like a warm-up thing. That I guess it's either the pre-populate or then just run the test for an extended period of time.
Okay. You don't see it very usable,
right? Having a warm-up thing? I don't know, it's something we've never really considered. I guess you could... If you submit you can submit an issue for it, and we can definitely look at it. So, yeah. So, yeah. Another question.
This is not exactly the question, but sharing the idea, because everyone is focused on mitigating the production workflow.
Yeah.
One of the companies, I will not tell the name, changed the attitude, because it's actually quite easy to take the structures and data even from production system, and you want to test something as it was production.
Yep.
So the other attitude, which I saw at the competitor, is to record the real application workload and then replay it on the test system.
Yes.
And didn't you think about this kind of attitude, this idea? It seems to be very reasonable, because you can take the production structures, samples of data, put in your cluster, replay on the live system, the workload and and replay it on the test system. With the same, the solution works like, which I saw is like is reapplication testing. Yeah. So this is like even mitigating the intervals between requests and things like this. So parallelism, everything.
It's a really good idea, actually. I think probably the way I would do it in TLP stress is probably write a workload to do something like that, a custom workload that might do that sort of pre-populate for you, perhaps. To do that sort of thing, I guess we'd have to have some sort of API that you could call to do
some of that. Yeah. For example, the database driver works because I'm not a developer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but maybe there is the possibility to record each request.
Yeah, there could be. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I'd probably put something in a ticket with some details so we can spend more time on it. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yep. Any other questions? All right, I think we're good for time because we've got 10 minutes to get the next session. So I want to thank everyone for coming today. So thank you.